Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yatri me sadasadrupe pratishidhe swasamvida avidyayatmanikrite iti tad brahma darshanam yatri me sadasadrupe pratishidhe swasamvida avidyayatmanikrite iti tad brahma darshanam. Treme sadasadrupe pratishidhe swasamvida avidyayatmanikrite iti tad brahma darshanam yatre me sadasadrupe asamvida avidyayatmanikrite iti tad brahma darshanam yatre me sadasadrupe pratishidhe swasamvida avidyayatmanikrite iti tad brahma darshanam yatra whenever ime in all these sat asat gross and subtle rupe in the forms of pratishidhe on being nullified swasamvida by self-realization avidyaya by ignorance atmani in the self krite having been imposed iti thus tat that is brahma darshanam the process of seeing the absolute. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Purport. The difference between self-realization and material illusion is to know that the temporary or illusory impositions of material energy in the shape of gross and subtle bodies are superficial coverings of the self. The coverings take place due to ignorance. Such coverings are never effective in the person of the personality of Godhead. Knowing this convincingly is called liberation or seeing the absolute. This means that perfect self-realization is made possible by adaptation of godly or spiritual life. Self-realization means becoming indifferent to the needs of the gross and subtle bodies and becoming serious about the activities of the soul, of the self. The impetus for activities is generated from the self. But such activities become illusory due to ignorance of the real position of the self. By ignorance, self-interest is calculated in terms of the gross and subtle bodies, and therefore a whole set of activities is spoiled life after life. When, however, one meets the self by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. Therefore, a man who is engaged in the activities of the self is called Jivan Mukta, or a liberated person, even in the conditional existence. This perfect stage of self-realization is attained not by artificial means, but under the lotus feet of the Lord, who is always transcendental. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is present in everyone's heart, and from him only all knowledge, remembrance, or forgetfulness takes place. When the living being desires to be an enjoyer of material energy, illusory phenomenon, the Lord covers the living being in the mystery of forgetfulness, and thus the living being misinterprets the gross body and subtle mind to be his own self. And by culture of transcendental knowledge, when the living being prays to the Lord for deliverance from the clutches of forgetfulness.
Do you have to talk during the purport?
The Lord, by his causeless mercy, removes the living being's illusory curtain, and thus he realizes his own self. He then engages himself in the service of the Lord in his eternal constitutional position, being liberated from the conditioned life. All this is executed by the Lord, either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency. Okay, this is basic philosophy. I don't want to make a dull class just saying things you've heard a million times. But it has to be heard a million times until we're convinced. We know we're not this body, but we don't act like it. We don't think like it. We still go on thinking and acting as if we were this body. So we have to have it beaten into our heads over and over again. And there may be those who complain that Prabhupada just beat the same simple facts into our heads over and over again. And they want to get some juicier nectar from somebody else. Let them go. But until you understand, actually, that you're neither this gross or subtle body, you're not your body, you're not your mind. Until you realize that, until you're convinced absolutely of that, you won't be able to taste the nectar of real spiritualized. You'll be drinking the nectar from the sewer of material life. Anyway, sadhana sadrupas, this is our misidentification. Elaborate show of illusion has been created to bewilder us. That's the material existence. We each have our individual participation in material existence, and then there is the total collective entanglement, illusion, for each individual and for everybody all together, as communities and as the whole population of the universe together. And it comes in two forms, gross and subtle. Just like your mother may have told you, put on a jacket. It's not good enough to go outside with just a shirt. Put on a jacket also. So material nature gives us two coverings, inside and outside, underwear and outerwear. The underwear is the subtle body. Just like normally you don't walk around showing your underwear to everybody, similarly, the subtle body is normally not visible. Yogis can perceive it. Or, yes, if you're advanced in meditation, you may perceive your own and even other people's subtle bodies by yogic power. But it's not, with normal perception, not perceivable. The subtle body is imperceptible. But it's closer to the real self than the gross body. Just like you may be feeling an itch. The problem's probably with your underwear, not with your outerwear, because the underwear is touching your skin. And you should have washed it properly. And now you haven't, and you're itching. Similar to that, our first interface with reality is through the subtle body. That's where most of our real problems reside. If we have an itch, if we have a disturbance in our consciousness, it's probably coming from the subtle body. Physical body creates pain and so-called pleasure, but the real, the more immediate source of perceptions is the subtle body. If the mind is inattentive, just like if you're under anesthetic in an operation and they're cutting out your gallbladder, you're dreaming about something. You're dancing with fairies on the moon under anesthetics, and they're cutting out your gallbladder, and you're not aware of the pain. You'll be aware later when you come out of the operation. You'll get enough pain then, but while you're under anesthetic, you're not aware of what's happening to your physical body. So if the subtle body is not attentive, if the mind is not attentive, then you don't even feel the pleasure and pain of the gross body. The mind is capable of turning its attention so many different directions. And we can say it's atomic in the sense that it can only pay attention properly to one thing at a time. It can quickly shift from one thing to another, but usually your mind is, unless you've got some special mind, but normal minds only think about one thing at a time. So, if you're very concentrated on some important matter, like, if I talk to this person the right way, I can make $5,000. So you're so absorbed in that idea, I can get $5,000, that you don't even feel the pain in your gallbladder. There's a gallstone, and you don't even feel it because you're attentive to something else. Then later, you'll feel it. Your mind will eventually turn to the gallbladder. And then you have your intelligence, which tries to control the mind and fix it in certain directions, to pay attention to particular important things. So by the processes, the activity of the mind and this intelligence together, thus, is selective. The subtle body doesn't pay attention to everything all the time that's going on the outside world, in your body and in the external world. It selects. The subtle body is selective. You can say it's like a filter. There are so many things coming from outside, but the subtle body filters out the unimportant, undesirable things. Just like you go to sunbathe, to sit on the beach and get a tan, which is a dangerous thing to do. You can get skin cancer. You can debilitate yourself. And it's stupid just to sit hours and hours under the sun, just lay there like a log. You could be doing something useful. But people do it. But on top of that, they smear themselves with sunscreen lotion to filter out the dangerous parts of the sun's rays. They want the part that makes their skin darker. At least in the countries where people have light skin, they want to be darker. The places in the countries where people have dark skin, they want to be lighter, so they don't let their children play in the sun. But the people who have light skin, they want to become darker skinned. They sit out in the beach. But they put the sunscreen lotion on to block out, to filter out what's not desirable, the ultraviolet rays or whatever. Or the ultraviolet rays are wanted. Some other rays are not wanted. So the subtle body has this filtering function of reducing the bombardment of constant sensations from the outside coming through our senses, reducing it to something that can be tolerated and coherently dealt with. We can pay attention to a few things, one after another, and not be bewildered by all the things that are happening. That bird is in a tree next door chirping. But if I listen, you know, to pay too much attention to the bird, I would not know what to say. I'd lose my train of thought. So I have to ignore the bird. And my intelligence, actually Krishna as the super soul, helps me do that. Matak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. Thanks to the help of the super soul, I can forget the bird in the corner there. That's material life. We're carrying two coverings. And it's the whole operation is undesirable. Material life is full of suffering and confusion, and worst of all, it's full of forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord. To be bodily and mentally conscious is an unfortunate existence. That is the definite opinion of this Shastra and many other Shastras. And we don't read the Shastras that tell you that it's good to be bodily and mentally conscious. We throw those books away. Yogi so-and-so may tell us that. We don't listen to Yogi so-and-so. But Swami Bhaktivedanta, in his purports, following the teachings of the Bhagavatam and the Vedas, is telling us that to be attached to identify with your body and your mind is the basis of all your suffering and confusion and all your disappointment. This has to be dealt with. You want to remain in ignorance, okay, be foolish. But if you want to get out of ignorance, if you want to become enlightened, if you want to be saved from material suffering, you've got to give up this attachment to gross and subtle bodies. This always thinking about what's going on in your body and your mind. Those things are going to go on. Every day you eat food and you digest it, and then it comes out the other end. These processes go on. Am I going to spend all my time thinking about how I'm digesting, how am I excreting? The person who spends all this time thinking about that, his digestion and his excretion, is not, I don't think, making the best use of his time. He could be doing more elevated things than thinking about the bodily functions. Similarly, even on a subtle level, I may be thinking about the welfare of my nation, the welfare of my gender, the welfare of the whole human race, the whole planet, is still material. It's still the same kind of illusion, just a little more refined. It's based on identification, false, let's say, inappropriate identification with one's individual material coverings and our collective material conditioning. We're not here. We're a mixed company, but suppose we were all from the same country. Then we could have a nationalistic assembly and discuss the glories of our country and why we should be patriotic. At least because we're from 15 different countries, we don't do that. You know, we can learn that everybody's in Maya, no matter what country you go to. But if we were a homogeneous assembly, we could discuss the glories of our individual community. You know, the vaishyas, the businessmen are the most important people. They're maintaining everybody. Let's hear it for the businessmen. Or any other community. That's also illusion, collective conditioning. Identifying with the material, falsely attached to a material identification. This is the cause of our suffering. It's not that we should not have any community life, that we should all become hermits and live all by ourselves and avoid human society. But we have to modify human society so it's sane. Not collective identification based on illusion. We should have collective identification, international society for Krishna consciousness, where we identify with one another as servants of Krishna. This is what's required. If there's something wrong with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we should fix it. Because exactly this is what the world needs. There's a community of people who identify spiritually. Anyway, Suta Goswami in this verse is coming to the important point that Brahma Darshanam, spiritual realization, enlightenment, means or can only come about after you've given up your false identification with body and mind. Yatre me sadasad rupe, pratishyade. Pratishyade is negated. It's often understood to mean forbidden. Pratishid. In Hindi you say manahe. Yeah, dumrapan manahe. You can say pratishida also, but it's usually manahe. In Bengali they say pratishida. They use more Sanskrit words. Pratishida. You know, dumpan, I don't know how you say it. You know, smoking is forbidden. So forbidden is the common meaning of the word pratishida from siddhatu. Or it can mean here, just negated. We're not going to forbid the gross and subtle body. We don't have the power to do that. We can't abolish by some proclamation or resolution the gross and subtle bodies. Nobody has the power to do that. Not even Maya, not even Prakriti can abolish all the material coverings. By Krishna's desire, they're there, and we can't get rid of them. So it doesn't mean forbidding them, but it means negating your identification with them. When these two coverings, the gross and the subtle, when our identification with them is negated, then and only then we can develop Brahma Darshanam. We can see the absolute truth. We may not be Vaishnavas, and therefore we don't come to Krishna's temples, Lord Narayan's temples, to see his murti. We don't recognize that that murti of the personality of Godhead is the absolute truth, is Brahman. But even then, even if we have an impersonal or vague concept of what Brahman, the absolute truth, is, we have some hope of beginning to realize the absolute truth when we lose our identification, our attachment to gross and subtle body. For many meditators and gyanis, yogis and gyanis, it's themselves, the jiva soul, that they perceive as Brahman first. Brahman realization is talked about in general terms in the Upanishads. Brahman doesn't have any form and doesn't have any name and doesn't have any anything. But that Brahman is not distinguished from the individual soul. Soul is soul, Atma is Atma. And many parts of the Upanishads don't clearly distinguish between the Jivatma and the Paramatma. Because they're talking to people who don't want, who refuse to make that distinction. They just want a generalized, vague self-realization. They're not ready to acknowledge, I'm not God. Okay, you're qualitatively equal to God. We won't push the difference, but at least realize that you're spirit. So for many, the first entrance into self-realization is by realization of your own self. Natural, most people are interested primarily in their own self. Even devotees, when we're immature, we're concerned about ourselves. Only as we become mature do we become really concerned about Krishna's happiness. That's the difference between immature devotional service and mature devotional service. In the immature stages, we're still selfish. In the mature stages, we're selfless because we care. We actually care about Krishna's happiness. And by coming to that level, we automatically care about everybody else's happiness. We become selfless. But immaturity is there even among devotees who are just beginning. Or they've just been beginning for 4 or 5 decades, but still they haven't risen above this immature stage. It's there, even among Vaishnavas, the selfishness. or absorption in one's own self. It's natural. It's the way of the material world. Everybody looks out for himself. But that you can begin your Brahman realization, your realization of the Supreme, even on that selfish level. Realize how you're so important. Well, realize how you, Asachidananda, are eternal, fully conscious and fully blissful when you're self-realized. But you got to give up identification with the gross and subtle bodies if you want to have even that kind of self-realization. So, Sutta Goswami will become more specific in the next few verses about what kind of self-realization is recommended. And certainly throughout the rest of the Bhagavatam, we're not the Bhagavatam speakers are not promoting so much impersonal or vague self-realization. What is promoted in Srimad Bhagavatam is attention to the activities of the Supreme Lord and his pure devotees. That hearing and chanting about these glories of the Lord and his devotees, that is self-realization, and practice of it will develop your enlightenment. That's the Bhagavatam's program.
Hare Krishna. So, do we have any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you very much. In the purport, there's the last sentence, or this last paragraph was speaking about a deliberated stage, and then says, all this is executed by the Lord either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency.
Yes. The Maya, the material energy, has two aspects, vidya and avidya. Avidya is the part of the material energy that puts us more and more in illusion. But there's another, she has a sister, avidya has a sister called vidya. They're both expansions of Maya. Vidya gives enlightenment, material enlightenment, but that material enlightenment it leads in the direction of real enlightenment. You can learn to become detached from the material world through the sufferings imposed on you by Maya. When Maya arranges for you to become more and more confused, that's avidya working. But when Maya punishes you and you learn a lesson from it, a good lesson from it, that's vidya potency working. Or even you go to the university and study philosophy or study medicine. You're getting the influence of the vidya shakti, the material enlightenment shakti. That helps us move in the right direction. If I stop being a complete scoundrel and I become a decent man by getting an education and being taught a few things, even though it's material education, that's moving in the direction of actual enlightenment. To come to the mode of goodness, or at least to get out of the mode of ignorance and go to passion at least, that's a step forward. And it's the material of vidya shakti, the knowledge potency of Maya, that's helping us do that. Just like if I'm going downhill instead of uphill, if I'm getting degraded, then it's more entangled, then it's the avidya shakti working on me. Of course, it can be, your life can work in such a way that you're getting influenced in different ways by both at the same time. You're getting a good education, but you're also developing bad habits, staying up all night carousing, getting drunk with your friends. You're learning so much in your PhD program, but you're also behaving like a barbarian. So both potencies could be working on you at different parts of your life at the same time. You're up to 5 o'clock, you're being influenced by vidya shakti, and when the sun sets, avidya takes over.
Okay, sure.
Anything else? Yes, I agree with you.
Does any shape or size of subtle body And second question is, how the yogi see the subtle body in its yogic process?
I don't know that yoga process. These powers to see things that other people can't see come from the sadhana of yoga. You open up your third eye or whatever, and you see things other people can't see. How that works, I don't know. I never did it. And the first part of the question was, what's the size of the subtle body? We have some information about the size of the soul. Well, subtle body is probably not smaller than the soul, and it's got to fit inside the heart, so it's probably not bigger than the heart. And the heart's one mushti, one fist. So subtle body must be somewhere between 1/10,000th the tip of a hair and one fist, somewhere in between. But I don't know of any particular statements about the size of the subtle body. First of all, it's subtle energy. Subtle energy isn't exactly measurable the same way as concrete physical energy. It doesn't stay in one place. It's more like, amorphous. It moves around. It doesn't stay in one place exactly. So it may not stick to one exact size. And I don't know of any scriptural definitions of the size of the subtle body. Is anybody? Yeah?
There's one statement I heard. He went and visited some Madhvites. And he was saying that he was preaching to, he showed a movie to them. And then he started describing, according to Ayurveda, the Acharya of the Madhva Sampradaya there, he said that according to Ayurveda, the subtle body extends for a meter or more around the body.
Oh.
And he was explaining how that's why we always have people around us chanting mantras, because if we interact with demoniac people, their subtle body will influence us. So,
yeah.
So in other words, he was saying, if I would go to the West, I would fall down. And I'm impressed with the preaching that all your devotees are doing, that you're not being affected by all these people.
Yes, we've got a protective force field.
But he was saying that according to Ayurveda, it extends for some period.
Okay, so Ayurveda talks about that. I wasn't aware of it. It makes sense. Because if someone comes within a meter of you, your false ego starts getting irritated. So that's the subtle body. You're bumping into the bubble of subtle body around somebody when you get too close. I think psychologists have noted that it varies from culture to culture, how close you can get to somebody before they get annoyed. In South America, you can be right in somebody's face. And you don't get annoyed, but in America, you'll get punched in the face if you come that close. So it may vary from culture to culture. Yes.
You mind using the mic? Is it proper if we understand that those descriptions that are given in Upanishads about the size of the soul, like 1/10,000th of the part of the hair, if we understand that they are figurative, just meant for meditation?
You mean don't take it literally? That it's not really true?
Yeah, just figuratively. Like, just to say that it's smaller than what
you
can imagine.
I don't know. We'd have to check the acharyas on that, whether we should not. I think we should accept all the statements of the Shastra, of the Vedas, especially Shruti. We should accept literally, unless the acharyas tell us to interpret it otherwise. I don't think we should take the liberty of rejecting the literal significance of statements of Shruti. Narayan isn't really the Supreme Lord, even though it says so.
Because there are other
Song in the opera Porgy and Bess by George Gershwin, it ain't necessarily so. The things they tell you in the Bible ain't necessarily so. We don't want to be like that.
Yeah, because there are other statements which says that, not independently, but to reconcile within the Shastras, other places it says that it's really immeasurable, so...
Or that it's the soul is more brilliant than 10,000 suns. There's a statement somewhere.
Yeah.
But I think that's the soul. I think what you're dealing with there is the soul under different conditions. The conditioned soul is shrunk down. the realized soul expands to his original size. So I think we're talking about the size of a conditioned soul is 1/10 that's not the sifter here, but not an awakened soul is probably bigger. Is bigger. How can you be more brilliant than 10,000 suns when you're that small? That would be pretty intense. And I don't think that's the situation. I think it's just like you take a sponge, you dry it out, and it becomes very small. When you add the water, it expands back to its original size.
Yes.
Can you please explain how the potency of bhakti can change the subtle body? Because there's
change the what body?
The subtle body itself. Because some Vaishnavas, they say that subtle body, the soul itself has an attribute of a guna attached to it, and so that cannot be changed at all. Like
the soul has gunas attached.
Yeah, like sattva, a sattvic soul.
Okay, but we don't agree with that at all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm saying that. So we say that it's a subtle body which is attributed with this guna and it's predominating, and because of which the soul seems like as if it's predominated. A person is predominated.
Yeah, the conditioning of the mode, where the conditioning of the mode starts with is in the subtle body. It shows up in the gross body. You know, the effects of the modes show up in the gross body, but they start in the subtle body. Our attitude is sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic, or something mixed in between. It's our ego, first of all, that gets influenced. Ego, the description of the universal creation. Ahankara is created, is produced, and then it divides into three modes, influenced by each of the three modes. So ahankara, before anything else, is influenced by the three modes of nature. That's said so many times in the Bhagavatam and other shastras. Significant. That's where false ego, and individually also, where your influence of the mode starts is in your ahankar, in your ego. And where we're going to have to disconnect it is going to be also in the ego. It's ego work. To give up, you really want to give up attachment to the mode of mode of passion or ignorance, you have to work on your ego, on who you think you are. Because that's where your attachment starts. That's where it should end also. You know, if there's a joint at which something's tied onto something, you have to go to that joint and cut the knot there to actually sever it. So we have to go to the ahankara and work on that level to get free from attachment to the modes. Who do you think you are? If you think you're a businessman or a beggar, then you're attached. Materially. But if you think you're a servant of Krishna, then that knot is cut. Think you're a servant of Krishna and act like one. Then the knot is cut. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I'm the spirit soul. I perceive. I can perceive the workings of the mind, of my mind. I can perceive the workings of my intelligence. But how do I perceive or feel the workings of my false ego?
Well, we don't like to. Because false ego, first of all, false ego is false, and we don't want to admit that we're false. The whole purpose of false ego is to pretend it's true. If you can't pretend it's true, then you can't believe in it. If you know it's false, you won't believe in it. If you really know that I'm not Canadian, then you can't be convinced by it. So I don't know if that answers the question.
I guess it's hard to perceive the false.
Oh, how to perceive false ego? Well, the thing is, first of all, it's the most subtle of the three components of the subtle body. So the subtler it gets, the harder it is to perceive. With regular perception. I'll get to you in a second. But the other thing is there's a psychological block. We don't want to see the falsity. So therefore we want to ignore our false ego and pretend it's reality. It's just, that's what I am. That's all. It's not false ego or anything. When Sigmund Freud introduced the principle of ego in psychology, in modern psychology, it was radical. Because then you really have to get under your skin and deal with reality. you know, that you think you're something and you're actually something else. That makes most people nervous to have to deal with that. Then you have to realize that you're living a false life and you have to change, and people don't want to change. So the psychological block against it, and then first of all, it's so subtle, how are you going to see it? Even if you do want to see it, you do want to be rectified, how are you going to see the subtle body, or the false ego? The reliable way to do it is go to someone who's got good vision, a sober head, go to a spiritual authority, and be ready to accept what he says. You know, and if he tells you, I don't mean you, you're a puffed up fool. You think you're this and that, and you're not. You think you're a big scholar, you're not. You'll never become, I don't mean you. I don't mean you, okay? But just an example. You know, the guru, you know, you really want to know the truth from the guru, he says, okay, I'll be honest with you, you'll never become a real scholar. You just don't have it in you. You know, it's just an example. I don't mean this apply to anybody. So the way, if you can get over this mental block and you want your false ego destroyed, then go to a spiritual master who will be honest with you and frank, and he can tell you. Any intelligent person can see it, but you need someone really spiritually advanced to be able to communicate it to you. That you're this, and you think you're this and this, but you're really that. You need help from somebody else. You need to go to a specialist, you know, ego specialist, and you know, get some expert work on your ego. I don't mean you. Yes, Prabhu. That means that the dissolution of the subtle body only happens when you actually become fully liberated. It doesn't happen until the end of your material existence. When you're released from material bondage, then your subtle body dissolves. It's final, complete liberation. Up to that point, you can't get rid of it. It follows you wherever you go. You leave one body, go to another, your subtle body follows you, especially your ego. Like some puppy dog, you know, who decides that you're his master and he follows you everywhere. So your false ego follows you from one body, and your rest of your subtle body follows you from one physical gross body to another. But at the time of final liberation, when you're actually freed and Maya just goes away from you and never comes back again, at that time the subtle body dissolves. But we are told in the Bhagavatam that the only practical way to do that is bhakti yoga, devotional service. Kapiladeva says, Jarayat yashu ya kosham nigirna manoloyata. The practice of bhakti yoga, pure bhakti yoga, dissolves the subtle body. Just like the food you eat is digested in the stomach. It's a natural process, but it can only be affected by pure devotional service. Other means, impersonal realization, yogic exercises, they're inadequate. They will bring you close to the goal, but you can only reach that goal of liberation, of dissolving the subtle body, by devotion to the Supreme Person. Another similar example that Prabhupada gives, I presume he gets it from the Bhagavatam or somewhere else, is that it's like you have a chickpea seed, maybe even hundreds of years old, and it still might come back to life. It still might fructify. You could store a chickpea for hundreds of years, and it might not die. It may be still, you know, capable of germinating. You just add water, and it will turn into a plant, even after sitting around for hundreds of years. They found grains in the tombs of the pharaohs from 3,000 years ago, and those grains sprouted. But if you take the same chickpea and you fry it with chonk in a frying pan, that kills it. If you fry the chickpea, then it's dead. It will never fructify. So the process of frying with masala is compared to bhakti yoga. Devotional service destroys the subtle body, like frying a chickpea in a pan that chickpea could otherwise be viable for hundreds of years. Okay. Yeah. All right. Maybe one last question. Yes.
Follow that way, but looks like there is a way to think about oneself as a devotee of God, a devotee of Krishna, in such a way that it actually makes us more conditioned.
Yeah. Can I give you an example? You know, I'm practicing the meditation of thinking I'm Krishna's devotee, and the temple commander comes and says, can you help clean up the prasadam hall? I'm sorry, I'm busy thinking that I'm a servant of Krishna. You know, that's false. If you're really thinking that you're a servant, you should act as a servant. It's ridiculous to think you're a servant and then refuse to serve. That means you're thinking that you're a servant, but you don't want to really be a servant. Then you don't know what the word servant means. You have to look at study the dictionary and ask a few people what servant means. You can meditate on something, but you know what the words mean when you're meditating on something. Okay. I will stop here. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.